Are you suffering from back pain? Well, I've got the thing just for you. 15 surefire tips for relieving back pain, plus 192 others just in case, volume 1, available at Amazon.com. Over 30 million Americans are suffering with back pain at this very moment. The vast majority of these cases are either caused or exacerbated by common lifestyle factors. Many of the same factors may be causing you pain right now. Join board-certified physician Andrew Kirshner as he guides you through the parts of your life where these problems occur and gives you simple, safe, and effective solutions for these common daily pitfalls. In this fun and informative book, you will learn how to identify the aspects of your life which may be causing you pain, how to create a back-friendly environment, how you can improve your pain by improving your sleep, ways to make a pain-free commute, how you can perform daily activities without making your pain worse, and much more. Andrew Kirshner is so well respected in the field of back pain relief. He has, famous clients such as DJ Jazzy Jeff. He has done many talks and lectures at universities in the UK. He has appeared on QVC demonstrating back pain relief products, and that is because he is an expert in his field and people trust him. Also, check out the 5-star reviews on Amazon.com. This is the book that you need if you suffer from back pain. That's 15 surefire tips for relieving back pain, plus 192 others just in case, volume 1, available at Amazon.com in paperback. Check the link below the show for more information.
Hello everybody and welcome to another episode of Turn Chuckle on BBG Wrestling. I am Pablo and Foxy is not with me this week. I swear to God we will get our shit together. Either we will do this from the same room on a regular basis or we will at least, have the same schedule. It's my fault really. I am awful for keeping to any kind of schedule. But yes, our guest this week is Paul Diamond, aka Kato, aka Max Moon. Now, as a particular fan of early 90s WWF, I, was very, very excited about this interview. Paul did this a few days before he went in to get both shoulders replaced, and I believe a knee replacement as well. So, and, if you know Paul Diamond's wrestling style, he went pretty full on as Kato, as Max Moon in Bad Company with Tanaka, and he was respected by many, many wrestlers, and including Shawn Michaels, who he had a long-term friendship with, and he even trained at Shawn Michaels training school in the late 90s, and we go into all of that. There's tons of Max Moon talk, because I think people, are slightly confused why I love 1993 so much. I will actually be watching something from 1993 before I go to bed tonight, because that's just, how a single wrestling fan, kind of rolls. It's unbelievable that I have friends, really, with the amount of 1993 WWF that I watch. But, I got into wrestling Christmas 92, and, wrestling was hot in the UK, so it was easy just to get stuff, and it was actually very mainstream as well. So, the WrestleMania album was the first album I ever got for my 7th birthday. It was just everywhere. So, and the colourful characters, obviously Max Moon was in, was he in the sticker album? He wasn't in the 93 sticker album. He was in over various bits and bobs, but he wasn't in the 93 sticker album. But I was instantly familiar with him, and just he was a part of that time frame, colorful costumes, just wacky characters, and it has stuck with me to this day. So yeah, it's a fun interview with Paul Diamond, and we cover all aspects of his career, and I want to thank him and his wife, his lovely wife, for being so accommodating as well, because they could have just told me to fuck off. Because he was in great deal of pain and went in for surgery and everything. And, he'd also went through a bit of a time, because he got his Max Moon costume stolen. And there's a bit of controversy going on with that. Because, he'll want it for conventions and all that kind of thing, because who wouldn't want to meet Max Moon? You know, if he came to the UK, I would be front of the line to meet Max Moon. So before we get into the interview, of course, want to thank the sponsor, 15 Surefire Tips for Relieving Back Pain. He's a real sponsor. Please check out the link and support the book, because that then in turn supports the show. And this Friday, the 18th of October, I will be hosting an evening with Paul London. Please don't die, an evening with Paul London at the Majestic Theatre in Darlington. There is a Facebook page and you can check all that out. Tickets are, I believe, a fiver, so very, very cheap. And it would be good to see you there as well. He is in the UK to film scenes for a movie by James Campbell called Tiger Man, where he plays Elvis avenging the death of Bruce Lee. I mean, that I'm just immediately sold on that. And while he's here, he's doing this evening with, he will be happy be bringing bits of memorabilia to auction off to help fund the film. And I personally, as a nerdy collector, I'll be getting well involved in all of that. But yeah, I'll also be on stage asking questions, having just a, you know, bit of a laugh, really, hopefully. And but the main aim is to promote the movie as well. So yeah, do come along, ask your questions, submit them on any of our social medias, Grapple Arcade on Twitter, on Instagram, Turnchuckle on Instagram, we're on YouTube, and obviously BBG Wrestling, all that good stuff. So yes, without any further ado, this is our interview with Paul Diamond.
What memories do you have of the UK and your European tours?
Oh man, I think WWE just started going over there, so I mean, it was wonderful. The fans, the buildings were packed, and the fans were into it. It was great to work there. Anytime you have a full arena to perform in front of, that's what you want to be doing. And so, my memories are, I'm fond of going overseas, going to Europe, and especially England, full arenas, fans going crazy. That's exactly who you want to perform in front of.
Absolutely. And you came here as Kato and as Max Moon.
I did. Yes. Right. Yeah.
That's good.
I was going to say, the only time actually it was in London. The only time that I was ever in the ring with Andre the Giant was Orient Express and Mr. Fuji against the Rockers and Andre the Giant.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. That's something that a picture recently, I don't know if you saw it, but a picture recently turned up of Andre wrestling in the UK in 1991. That was kind of mind-blowing, because I think everyone fought his last match in the WWF was at WrestleMania 6. He made appearances after that at the European Rampage and some other events as well. But he actually wrestled in 91. So, I mean, what was do you know what the thinking was behind that? Did it take much persuasion to get Andre back in the ring? Or,
you know what? That I don't know. But, I think probably the fact that it was, one of the early tours going over there, they kind of wanted to, if they could have, one of the biggest names in the business ever to make an appearance. I mean, he had already, had his knees, he had done knee surgeries, a knee replacement and stuff, and he wasn't, moving anything like what he used to. It was just the fact that it was Andre in the ring. He didn't have to really do anything, but maybe just even stand there and the people would have, gone crazy. So I think that's probably what the thinking was, just, get that huge name out there and, give the people a chance to actually see him one last time.
That's amazing. So was Andre gentle with you when he got his hands on you?
Oh yeah, basically he didn't do anything he didn't want you to do, but he didn't do a whole lot. I do remember, getting in the ring with him for briefly a few seconds, but the only thing that I know is end of the match, you wound up pinning Mr. Fuji. So, but yeah, for the most part, he didn't do a whole lot, but it was just the fact that he was a part of the tour and a part of that match that was huge.
Well, the matches that you had with the Rockets, because obviously there were some on TV, there were some on pay-per-view, etc. So on the house shows, did they generally, because they were so action-packed, would they go on last sort of thing? Because of the they were hard to follow.
Yeah, you know, the house shows, usually they would put us on last just because of that reason. But like, you know, the 91 Royal Rumble, so we opened the show with that match. So, and of course, you know, pay-per-views, they have their main event being advertised, you know, for months on end. So that wouldn't make any sense. But no, yeah, for the most part, in the house shows, you know, we go on last or near there just because, you know, we had some great matches with those guys.
Absolutely. But that means you don't get back for room service if you go on last.
No, right. So, but I mean, you know, that's the one thing about, you know, WWF or WWE now, I guess. I mean, you know, the card or whatever, the schedule would be made out, but they would always change it as to the order of the matches. It had nothing to do with what the actual card looked like that the fans would get. They always just change it just depending on, you know, how they felt it would be best for the people to enjoy the show, so.
Did you enjoy the anonymity of being able to wrestle under a mask? And when you were Kato and Max Moon, were you put out there as Paul Diamond or another persona as well?
No, you know what? The anonymity, yeah, at times, I mean, there was obviously people that, you know, the hardcore wrestling fans that were aware of it, but, you know, a lot of the fans didn't know who I was. So yeah, it was kind of nice to be able to, you know, go through airports and different places without really having to sign autographs. And not that, you know, anytime, of course, yeah. Anytime that somebody, you know, would approach me, I'd love to do that. But at that point, yeah, no, I mean, either, you know what, it really didn't matter. I was just glad to, you know, have a job, have a position at that point, and whatever they decided they wanted me to do, I would have done. So, it really wasn't any big deal.
Were you, and forgive me if I'm just completely off base on this, but was it like Shawn Michaels in particular recommendation that you come in to the WWF?
You know what? I don't think so. It might actually been my partner because...
he was there first, wasn't he, with Sato?
But also, you know what? There was... when... let me see. How did that wind up happening? Oh, yeah, right. So, no, if I remember correctly, we were on a show in Missouri, Cape Girardeau, Missouri, and the match was scheduled as the Orient Express versus the Rockers. At that point, Akio Sato was still, you know, part of the original Orient Express. And also... I had been brought in just as Paul Diamond, you know, to work singles matches with the WWF at that point. And because Sato was not at that show, they put me in that match. You know, so actually it was, again, sort of bad company against the Rockers. And of course, different organization. But so we wound up having one of our matches. And I think that probably had to do a lot with them deciding to, you know, put me as a part of the Orient Express because they saw how, you know, we clicked with those guys and what we were able to do. So, no, I mean, like I said, other than maybe, you know, Pat may have mentioned something, but I think that match had a lot to do with them deciding to move along and, you know, put me in as Kato.
Were there huge differences in the styles of matches that you were having as the Orient Express compared to Bad Company?
None. No, I mean, you know, just obviously it was just a different gimmick. And we did have Mr. Fuji out there. So, you know, it was a little bit of getting adjusted to having him out there and using him for certain things. Mm-hmm. You know, we had Diamond Dallas Page as Bad Company, but Fuji kind of, you know, just wanted to be involved at certain times with, you know, he loved to get in a shot with his cane every now and then. So that's, you know, one of the things that was different. But as far as the action and the moves in different spots, nah, it was pretty much the same.
But was that your first time under a mask? Like, did that change?
Yeah, actually, it was.
Yeah.
It was. And, you know, everybody asks, well, wow, isn't, you know, hard to breathe? This, you know what? It just didn't take very long for me to get used to it, and I was fine with it. No problem.
So after actually, I wanted to ask the classic question, which I'm sure you've been asked, did Fuji ever pull a rib on you? You must have.
You know what? Did he pull on rib? You know, I don't know. He kind of, we got along real well. He rib Pat more so than, and of course, you know, everybody else. But that's the thing about Fuji. You couldn't, you know, God forbid that you would rib him. And especially, oh, should you touch his hat? Oh, wow. That would be the end of it.
What kind of things did he find? What kind of things did he find in his hat?
Well, no, I remember, you know, Jannetty squashing his hat and him finding, you know, oh my God. I mean, you know, he would just, that's like I said, he could dish out all the ribs, but he just seemed like he couldn't take them very well.
That's so, the thing. Like, I don't think, from what I hear, unlike someone like Owen Hart, I don't think Fuji's ribs were kind of funny as much as just they go very far. Like, he would set people's clothes on fire or remove the entire car engine from someone's car and stuff like that. Fuji would go to lengths for a rib.
Yeah, but, you know, so usually, yeah. I mean, I think all those, you know, kind of went on before I came along. Mm-hmm. I don't remember him, you know, but I just remember him getting angry. Like I said, I remember Jannetty, you know, squashing his hat, and, you know, he was not happy about that. So, yeah, the fact that, you know, he could dish out all the ribs, but not so good at taking them. You know what? I don't really remember one of the, I guess, probably, I don't know, probably not very funny. But so we were, I think, in Rochester, New York. And after a show, there was one of the Japanese guys, reporters and stuff. And he was sitting with us in a restaurant, you know, drinking and stuff. And the Japanese guy went to the restaurant and Fuji pissed in his beer.
Oh, jeez.
and the guy wound up drinking it.
Oh, okay.
And then he told them that he had drank it, and like he started crying, and it just wasn't a pretty sight.
Yeah, I can imagine. Oh, well, what led to Pat Tanaka leaving? Like, did you take it as a bad thing? Like, were you, like, sort of worried, of what are they going to do with just Kato? Or was there always maybe a plan for you to be? Because if you're a masked wrestler, I guess you can be something else as well.
Yeah, you know what? I think the reason, at least what I could figure out why, you know, they let Pat go or broke up the Orient Express. At that time, there was, as far as the babyface teams, there was the Rockers, there was the Bushwhackers, and Legion of Doom. Hmm. And, you know, once we ran through all those teams, there really wasn't anybody, another babyface team for us to, you know, go on the road with. So
was that kind of, because you also had the match at Royal Rumble 92 with the New Foundation as well. So were you kind of the team that, I hate to say it, but like sort of tested out new teams sort of thing and
I mean, you know, basically for sure. I mean, you know, and, you know, just, you know, putting over the LOD and, you know, I mean, that was our job. And, you know, we didn't mind doing that, you know, would have gladly done it with other teams. But, yeah, there just wasn't anybody else. Now, so, you know, at the point that so they let Pat go, I showed up at TV one time and Pat Patterson approached me and said, you know, Vince wants you to grow your hair back out. I said, what do you mean? Why? He said, well, we're going to put you with Jannetty and do like the new Rockers thing.
Oh, wow.
Well, like 2 weeks later, Jannetty gets arrested in Tampa. So much for that idea. So that fell through, you know, at that point I was just doing Cato and just kind of working with guys like, you know, Tatanka came in. I worked with him a whole bunch, just, you know, putting him over kind of, he was, you know, pretty green and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, that was my job and that was my position. I gladly would have, you know, kept it. So the new Rockers thing fell through. And then, of course, you know, I got lucky being in the right place at the right time. When the Conan thing with Max Moon didn't work out and, you know, wound up landing that. But,
was it kind of a nice role to have, to be trusted, to, you know, be the guy to have the first matches with, like, new talent and all that kind of thing?
Yeah, it was. And you know, again, you know, I gladly would have done it for as long as they would have needed me to do it, and I think they appreciated just the same. You know, they had kind of told me so, but you know, things didn't work out later on, and I'm sure we'll get to that at some point.
Just out of interest, because you guys were managed by Fuji at the same time as Demolition when they turned heel again, so were there many 8-man tags on house shows or anything like that?
No
crossover.
No, not at all. I think that was already kind of done, and I don't know that he was really doing very much with Demolition anymore. I think at the point that he was managing us, he had the Warlord.
Oh, Berserkers.
Berserker too, right. And I think then once we were gone, then, you know, they gave him Yokozuna and stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I don't believe there was any with the Demolition, or there wasn't any 8-mans, or I think that had already kind of been done.
So how close was the, because we've seen the pictures of Conan in the full robot kind of Japanese manga thing. So yep. Like, how yep. close was that to happening on a show? Because I mean, I'm sure you've seen on the network, like the Comic Kid matches and everything that have started showing up. And,
right. They tried to, actually. He was in all of that full costume and stuff at a previous TV taping show, but you know, I think he might have had like, you know, one or two matches before that, and then I showed up at, I don't know if it was the next, very next TV or whatever, but he was not there. You know, I asked and they said, no, he never showed up. So you know, that costume, once they realized what it entailed, that was never going to go on. There's no way you could take that on the road every night. Not a chance. And, you know, even just the arm pieces that were left when I was Max Moon, and that was still a pain in the ass to transport. And you know, you had to have flash paper, you had to have, like, the pressurized, what they use, like, for BB guns, you know, I mean, to be able to shoot out the confetti. And so, you know, yeah, it was kind of a pain in the butt to have to, and so if you can imagine that whole costume, and oh my God, I don't know what it would have taken, you know, for that. There's just no way that was going to travel. And Vince realized that.
Hmm. Were there ever issues through customs with that kind of stuff in your luggage?
No, I mean, because they never, you know, took the whole thing. It was just those two pieces that didn't, no, it wasn't a problem.
Not even with those two pieces, because would they not be counted as, like, explosives or anything like that, because they shot out the...
No, I don't, you know, because, you know, like I said, the, you know, the flash paper was just, it looked like tissue paper, and now as far as the other thing, I don't really think they realized what it was, so no, it was never a problem.
Was, at the time, because don't get, like, I love... early, like more than anything, early 90s WWF with sort of the more colourful characters and everything. And
by
WWF standards, that Max Moon costume is pretty colourful. Like, was it just kind of like, was it never really thought of as a thing? You know, because everyone was wearing like colourful gear at that point. And
go ahead.
Oh no, well, I was going to say how. Was Max Moon presented to you? Like, were there like plans for it, or?
Well, I don't know that they really knew if there was plans for it. But once I got going with it, and you know, I was on the road with Terry Taylor, mm-hmm. and Terry Taylor is, you know, an awesome talent. A great guy, and you know, we were having some terrific matches.
No pun intended there.
What's that?
I was just saying, no pun intended with terrific, Terry Taylor.
Right. Yeah, right.
Exactly. Oh, it's nerdy but, humor, yeah, okay.
Yeah, but yeah, so, you know, and so at that point, I think the fact that we were having those kind of matches, that may have kind of spurned them to go in a direction, because, you know, that 93 Royal Rumble in Sacramento, initially, you know, Terry and I were supposed to open the show.
I was going to ask you about that, because you're in the program.
Right.
And you also, you may not know this, but the German release of the video has the match advertised on the back of the video.
Oh, well, yeah. I don't know. That's interesting, because it never took place, obviously.
But, I mean, when you look back at it now as well, I mean, 93 was when, like, the Power Rangers happened, you know, when Street Fighter was in full force, all that kind of thing. So, it really was kind of its time, and in some cases... You know, before its time, in terms of, like, a couple of years later, Al Snow was brought in as Avatar and things like that. You know, it.
Right. Yeah. I think they had definitely had plans, especially once they realized, you know, that what I was able to do with it. But as I said, for other reasons, things didn't work out, and they wound up letting me go, and so. That was their thing, not mine.
Was it a coincidence that you faced Shawn Michaels on the first Raw? Like, did he mention you?
No.
Or was it just a...
No. Actually, Steve Armstrong refused to go on there and do a job for Shawn on the first Raw.
Oh, it's so... Was Steve Lance Cassidy?
Yes,
he was,
right.
Wasn't he? Yeah.
They wanted him to, you know, put Shawn over, and he wouldn't do it. And hell, and I was more than glad to. Anytime I had a chance to work with Shawn, no problem.
Mm. So when was that kind of? That was just before the Royal Rumble. So was the Royal Rumble one of your last appearances, or were you still in the WWF?
Yeah, actually, I wound up going to another European tour that I was never advertised for. It was in that Royal Rumble that Jannetty and Shawn Michaels had their feud blow-off match kind of thing, you know, after they split up. And Jannetty screwed up again, and you know, the match kind of didn't go as planned, and they wound up firing him right after that. And so they needed somebody to take his place on the European tour, and so they put me in it. But I'd say I'm pretty sure the European tour was the last of what I had done.
Was the costume uncomfortable to wrestle in? Or?
No, no, not at all. No, like the first one kind of was a little bit because it had this sort of shiny type of material that was on top of the actual spandex, and that kind of made it a little tight, but I peeled all that off, and so yeah, no, it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad at all. I mean, you get a little warm, but not really anything I couldn't deal with.
So you had the costume like at least for a long time after that then. So were you were you able to wrestle as Max Moon after that sort of thing? Or
I was, even though the WWF office said, oh well, we have the rights to blah blah blah, and I told them, well, so I have family and I have to make a living, so I'm gonna go and do this, and you guys go what you need to do, and they didn't do anything about it.
Do you feel that being courteous about it was to your advantage, whereas like Matt Bourne's Doink the Clown probably was a little less politically correct, you could say, and was let go under more questionable circumstances.
Yeah.
So, like it just.
Oh yeah. 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 I'm not sure how good they actually felt about them letting me go, but they had to make a decision and they did, and I had to make a decision and I did, and it's not like anybody was making millions of dollars off the thing, but I was at least being able to feed my family. So
absolutely. Well, I don't want to keep you too. I just wanted to ask you a few more things. Did you see something special in ECW at the time? Or was it kind of, and like, were you really happy to be teamed back up with Pat?
Oh, I'm always, happy to be teamed with Pat. Now ECW, I worked with him twice, right after, I was let go by, WWE. So 93, and they were just kind of getting started. And I really wasn't sure at that time because, if they were going to go anywhere. But then later on in 97, I went back and worked for them some, just by myself. And that's when everything had took off and they were just, hotter than a firecracker and just doing a bunch of, good stuff. So, at that point, they had their stars and stuff, and I just didn't get a fair shake. They had RVD and Sabu and, all these the Dudleys, and, it was kind of like a clique sort of, a group of people with Paul Heyman. And even though I had a relationship with Paul back to the Tennessee days and then also back to the early ECW days, I just really didn't get a fair shake as far as doing anything. I worked some for a while, but not anything I thought I could have, contributed more, but that's not, again, you just, people see it differently than you do, and that's all you can do is just, you can go work for them, and if you don't like it, you can leave. That's how usually this business works.
I was going to say, so you didn't see yourself as like a politician or anything like that. It was just kind of.
No. And, long ago I realized my shortcomings as far as, the wrestling business. I consider myself always, a good athlete. I played professional soccer, being born in Croatia and stuff, but, you had to have a certain personality to be on top in wrestling. Like, have mic skills, and that's one of the things that I realized was never going to happen for me, just because I wasn't the type of a person to, have the type of mic skills like your Flair and Hulk Hogan, Randy Macho and Savage. And, so those guys, it wasn't so much for them about being able to, work. It was obviously they had great mic skills and great personality, and that's what got them to where they got to. And I realized that that was never going to happen for me, you know. So I was just happy to do whatever I was offered and didn't mind, you know, putting people over. And like you said, you know, having when guys came in, working with them and teaching them, I was fine with that.
But two questions. So, I mean, because you had an overabundance of athleticism and would do a lot more than a lot of wrestlers on the card as well. Is that kind of what has led to like injuries, like at this time in life, and sort of the like? Am I okay to talk about the surgeries that you're about to have? And
absolutely, yes, no, yeah, no, yeah, for sure. You know, I mean, because you know, we, you know, took all kinds of crazy bumps over the years, and the body just kind of not meant to do that. You know what I mean? It just things have broke down on me now, and you know, I'm looking at, August 14th, next week, I guess, I'll be the first one. But I have to have both of the joints, knee replacement, both knees done, and my left shoulder. So over the next year and a half, whatever, however long that's going to take, you know, I'm trying to get myself back in as good a physical condition as I can so I can try and at least go do some kind of physical activity, which at this point, you know, the only thing I can do is maybe get in the pool and kind of.
How long have you needed this surgery? Like,
it's been a little while, but you know, it just progressively gotten worse, and I'm really close to. I mean, if for not getting this done real soon, I believe I'll be in a wheelchair pretty soon because I'm just having a tough time walking. You know, can't really go up downstairs. It's not excited.
I can imagine after the surgery and once you healed, the pain relief at that point is going to be pretty spectacular, I would think.
I sure as heck hope so.
Yeah.
Sure as heck hope so.
Yeah. Well, just a couple more questions because I'm incredibly grateful that you've been able to spend some time with me.
Sure, no problem.
At what point did you feel that you could use your skills as a trainer and as a teacher? Because you worked for Sean in the TWA for a while. Was it well before that, or was it when Sean made the call that you were like, I could do this?
No. It was before that. I mean, you know, that one of the things, you know, from the day that I got in wrestling, I always spent a lot of time, you know, thinking about matches, moves. I mean, you know, like when you watch wrestling, I mean, I just don't see a whole lot of psychology to any of it. And you know, back then there was still guys that you could learn from, you know, like Jake the Snake and, you know, Ted DiBiase and Flair. And I mean, just guys that, you know, knew how to put a match together and, you know, not necessarily just have to do a bunch of flips and, you know, backflips and splashes and all this stuff. I mean, yeah, there's a place for that at the proper time, but, you know, those guys really knew how to put it in the right place, and they didn't even have to do a whole lot of that and still, you know, get the match over. So that's so right from the beginning, I tried to, you know, learn about that. And as I went along, I really was conscientious to learn the psychology of the business, and especially when the new guys came in, to, you know, try and teach them as well. But nowadays, I don't guess it looks like they're just teaching them moves, and, you know, it's just, I don't know. It doesn't look like anything that I remember.
Absolutely. No, I agree. There's no school fight. That's the thing. I don't feel like I can critique it, or I should critique it quite as much because I'm not a wrestler. Because it's, I don't feel like it's right. My place. But when I show like a non fan or like an older fan of the older stuff, new wrestling, you know, generally, you know,
right.
You can when they can pick out flaws in the logic, or you know, if moves yes. look definitely choreographed and all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it I think it right. said something when like a non wrestling fan can do that.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, so I wanted to ask: would you say that Bad Company is the most 80s looking tag team of all time? Like, how much?
I don't know about that. I guess that's for the fans to decide.
How much hair product did you and Pat use in the 80s? Like,
how much what?
How much hair product did you use in the 80s?
Oh no, man! No, it was just you know the mullet that was in. So no hair product.
The thing that I've heard as well, the mullet is it's practical because the hair doesn't get in your eyes when you sweat as well.
Absolutely, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that was it. No, we didn't. No hair products. that's the you know the 21st century, I guess. Well, not back then. We didn't. No, not at all.
I'm guessing mesh was in the 80s as well.
I imagine so. That's what we chose and appeared to be accepted. So yeah, I guess so. Anyways, all right. Well, you know what? I gotta get going.
Yes. But, well, I want to say, where can people find you before I let you go? They can find you on Facebook and contact you that way.
Yes. Okay. Yes, absolutely. You know, I do. I can't accept any more friends on Facebook since I have 5,000. But yeah, they can like my fan page.
That's wonderful. And I'm guessing any promoters, etc., who want to get in touch as well can do the same.
Yes, absolutely.
Excellent. Okay. Well, look, Paul, thank you. Thank you very much, because I know you don't have too much time. And I'm incredibly grateful, and I know everyone will enjoy listening to this. So thank you very much, and we'll hopefully talk again soon.
My pleasure.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.